Dementia is the long goodbye, and one of the problems that characterises it is the breakdown in communication between the patient and the family, or the patient and the caregiver. Bernie McCarthy is a psychologist, dementia consultant and educator with a lot of experience in training staff who care for dementia patients. He's worked out the best approaches to communication, what works, in other words, and his book on this is called Hearing the Person with Dementia, Person-Centered Approaches to Communication for Families and Caregivers. Bernie McCarthy joins me now from Melbourne. Welcome to Life Matters.
Good morning, Richard.
Now, hearing the person with dementia, what do you mean by that?
The person with dementia can often get lost in the relationship that they have with people around them because the difficulties or the problems in the changes in their behaviour can often be much more visible and take the person, the caregiver's attention away from the fact that the person with dementia continues to be a person. And our focus in, my focus in this book is to really help the caregiver to refocus on the person inside, the continuing feeling person who has a life history, who has a perspective on reality, who has wants and needs and desires and capacities that continue. And what I'm hoping is that this book might help carers to be confident about caring for somebody with dementia, and continue to perceive the person within, that just having a diagnosis of dementia doesn't mean the end of the person.
Right. Yeah, I guess it's too easy for people to focus on the problems, on the difficulties, on the issues, and, as you say, almost forget about the person inside.
That's right. And I think that causes then a knock-on effect of further difficulties or problems for the person themselves, the person with dementia. Mm.
What are the common signs that someone's starting to lose their ability to express themselves?
One of the problems would be difficulty finding the words for things, nouns, losing names for people, losing names for objects, and then being much more vulnerable or more easily knocked by mistakes that they make. So they will then find themselves, as they lose the ability to put words or thoughts into a normal sentence form, their confidence about taking part in social interactions gradually wanes unless they're sustained by other people continually inviting them into conversation.
Right.
And this is where I find is one of the most difficult parts for a caregiver is to treat the person as a social equal and to continue to invite them, to remember to invite them into conversation and support them in that conversation, because this is where people with dementia will drop out socially.
Right, right, and become increasingly isolated, which doesn't help them at all, does it?
No, it has a compounding effect, and then the disease process is gradually increasing, but if the social environment doesn't support their continued function, then that social environment actually colludes with the disease, as it were, to produce more disability. So if we shift or support the person better in the social environment, we can actually work against the effects of the disease, which is going to continue. There's no stopping the process, but we can slow down the effects and improve the person's quality of life along the way.
Interestingly, I think this is important. It's one of the things that you do in the book. You explain how the brain works briefly as a way of understanding how it's likely to deteriorate. What are the key things to know?
Well, I've tried to keep it very practical and simple, and I guess that's one of the things I'm good at, is making complex things simple. One of the aspects about brain and behaviour is that changes in dementia behaviour are due to the combination of the brain problems that the person has and also the social environment, and the caregiver is part of that social environment. The brain has four lobes that contribute to its function, and the frontal part of the brain is responsible for much of our social function. But what's important about the brain is that it's a team activity. All of the lobes function together to produce the behaviour and the perceptions and the experiences that we have. So the front part of the brain is essentially helping us to manage our social reactions, the way we behave with others. The temporal lobes are where a lot of memory is processed. The limbic system is an area of the brain that moves across various parts of our brain, various lobes, to help us to have an emotional life and to put an emotional tag to a lot of our memories.
All right. The rain in New South Wales, you've got concerns about your mum and her attitude?
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Yes, my mum's fairly much down the dementia slope, and when I approach her, she says, get me out of here, I'm not staying here, I can look after myself, I'm just not staying, she says, and sometimes she says, you put me in here. And this approach is very wearing and really gets me down emotionally because I really don't know what to say to her. She's in high care, special dementia care.
Right, okay. What Bernie, what can you offer?
Hi, Lorraine. Thanks, Richard. I think, Lorraine, it's one of the things to do firstly is to empathise with her situation. How does she feel currently? And it sounds like she's feeling trapped and extremely negative about being there, which is a fairly common experience for people with dementia in nursing homes and hostels and residential care. But what I think is once you empathise with that, when you're conversing with her, don't get locked into that in the form of combat. Remember who she is and keep inviting other aspects of her to the fore. I would suggest saying, look, Mum, I can't do anything about the situation that you're in at the moment and I know it's unpleasant for you. And empathise in that way will often help to decrease the amount of distress that she has and her desire to fight you. So if she feels that you understand and empathise, then she's going to be less likely to want to fight you. And then you can have conversations about many of the other things that you and she will have in common and have lots of memories about.
All right, Lorraine. Thanks for your question. I hope that's helpful.
Thank you.
Anthony in Melbourne.
Yes.
You've got a question about how to engage with your dad who's, I understand, got shrinkage of frontal lobe. Is that right?
That's right, yes. And he has very much difficulty in communicating where he'll start a sentence and then not in fact complete the sentence. And often you'll get, when you ask him questions, was it about this or that, his only answer is no.
Right.
Okay. I think in that situation, Anthony, it's trying to pick up the gist of what he's saying or what he intended may be helpful. And to see, I'm sure you're probably doing this already, but trying to get the idea of what he was saying and then either completing the sentence or taking off on what would be the normal response to something like that, and then keep the conversation of turn-taking going so that he experiences normal conversational flow and pattern, and that may overcome the blockage or the stoppage that he experiences. This sort of thought blocking is sometimes characteristic of various types of dementia, and the expressing or producing speech is somewhat difficult. So if you keep the turn taking going by finishing or the sentence or completing it by going into the next response would be helpful for him.
Yes. Right. Is there any medication or exercises that can actually help stimulate the brain?
I think it's important to say that I'm a psychologist and medication's not my area of specialty. So that would be a question for your GP or a psychiatrist who specialises in old age, a psychogeriatrician. In terms of exercises, I think one of the best exercises is to keep normal conversational experience going, and that means daily access to conversation and a range of topics, simply keeping that turn-taking pattern going and keeping them exercising that usual function of conversing.
All right.
Lovely. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Anthony. I'm going to take a couple more, then I'll ask a few more questions. If you've just joined us, Bernie McCarthy's written a book really on communicating. On communication, it's one of the big problems that emerges in people with dementia, that the communication goes down the gurgler for both of you, and this is frustrating for both of you too. Anna in Hobart. Now, I think both your mum and dad are in
yeah.
some sort of care, but they need different levels of care. Is that right?
Yes, they do. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. What is your question for Bernie?
My question is, my brother is the primary caregiver in Melbourne. He's housed them in a private healthcare facility. My dad has been assessed as medium care, but my mum is very high care. These 2 points that the first caller, the 2 points you first made about people finding difficulty for words, for things they're trying to tell us, and finding names for people. I've seen this. I visited mum and dad briefly on the Mother's Day weekend. I'd like to know, what do you do with the expressions of aggression that come out primarily in my mother? And My brother rings me every day, which is wearying, but the poor guy will implode if I'm going to send him a copy of your book, Professor, but he will implode if he doesn't get some help. But my mum is being, well, the staff is telling my brother that she is most difficult in her aggression, and she's resorting to not eating at all.
All right, so the question is really about aggression in your mum, who requires a higher level of care. Bernie, what do you think?
Aggression is a fairly common experience for many caregivers from people with dementia, and I think if you look at what function aggression forms in our own lives, aggression is the expression of anger. Why do we feel angry? We feel angry generally because our needs have been frustrated or thwarted in some way, or not met, or we've been disrespected, or we think we've been disrespected, and we feel angry about that. And if you put yourself in the position of the person with dementia, their experience often is of being misunderstood, disrespected, feeling like their needs have not been met the way they perceive them as needing to be met. Now, all good care may have been provided and you may have done a terrific job, but the person may not in fact feel like their own needs have been met at that time. And this is where caregivers often feel extremely frustrated, is in doing what they think is exactly what needs to be done. But the essential part of a person-centred approach is that we try to get into the perspective of the person with dementia. What do they think they need? What do they feel like they need in terms of our behaviour towards them? So by trying to understand your mother and her particular perspective on life, and let's face it, all of us have a unique perspective and unique take on life, then we can start to frame an approach to her. So using a one-size-fits-all approach to aggressive behaviour is not a good solution. And this is where I think some caregivers, they want a magic approach, a magic pill that's going to fix aggression. And I sometimes get asked to provide that sort of training, and there really is no one-size-fits-all approach. It's going to be something that will need to be tailored to your mother, to her life story, to her personality, and that is responsive to how she is on the day.
All right. Thanks for that, Bernie. Anna, I hope that's helpful. Judy, in the Blue Mountains, you think your mother is in denial about her dementia and want to know really what to do. Is that right?
Yes. Hi, and thanks. Hi, Bernie. I have had my mum and my dad who have both had dementia. My dad's dementia was completely different from my mother's. My communication with him, although difficult, was far easier because he was willing to talk with me about it. Mum has been diagnosed for 3 years and would ask me repeatedly, what's wrong with me? What's happening to me? I'm feeling strange. And I started by trying to talk with her about our visits to the neurologist, and I wrote out very simple things about Alzheimer's that reflected her. Now I've decided that isn't working, and I guess I just try and go with each moment, but it's so different trying to communicate with Mum than it was with Dad, and because of this denial, and it's also, I guess, with her personality in her life.
Yes, I think, Jill, this is what we find is that often personality is continuous, and there'll be various features of her approach to life that are similar to the way she used to be. And it sounds like that sort of her need to protect her self-esteem, her sense of self from this assault on herself, this dementing process, is driving some of her reluctance to admit that this is what's happening for her. And that makes it extremely difficult for you. I think one of the ways that may be helpful is to minimise the opportunity for her to perceive an attack. And that is that if she gets a sense that she doesn't have to confront this disease constantly in her interactions with you, then she may relax a bit more about it. So the more normalised your reactions with her, the conversations, the topics, etc., the more you can draw on what's been pleasant in her life and enjoyable and put a focus on that, the more likely it is you're going to have some more pleasant interactions and also some memories as life goes on about your mother, rather than having a lot of difficult interactions.
All right. Thanks for that, Bernie, and I hope that's helpful, Judy. If you've just joined us on Life Matters, we've got Bernie McCarthy, the psychologist and expert on dementia, and especially on communicating with people with dementia. He's written Hearing the Person with Dementia. It's a book. It's got very practical ideas. Bernie, one of the things you've really emphasised in answering questions from listeners, and we'll get back to that shortly, is having empathy, having a bit of imagination about how you communicate. But what I'm struck by is that words have to be simple and direct and specific as often as possible.
Yes, that's right. And I think this comes back to the very nature of what happens in dementia early on, particularly Alzheimer's disease, which is one of the greatest causes of dementia, is the loss of words. So if I make a vague statement like, just get dressed, that sort of a statement is not going to be helpful to somebody with dementia, because what they need is specific instructions broken down so that they can follow each step along the way. Because getting dressed is a multi-stepped process that you and I take for granted, because we know that we have to put our undies on first and then each layer goes on consecutively. But the person with dementia may actually get the sequence out of order. So they may end up with their undies over the top if they don't have guidance to step the process. So what you might do is support them by not just keeping the verbal instruction simple and broken down into steps, but actually sort the clothing so that the first piece of clothing that you want to put them on, them to put on, is actually on the top.
Yes.
So they get them in sequence for them. So you do the sequencing that their brain can't.
And being careful not to say things with too much ambiguity and complexity. So
that's
something
right.
Like, you know, the bus will be here at 10 and we'll go to the shops and get fruit and veggie and then we can go and have a coffee if you like. Do you want to do that?
Yes, that sort of multi-component paragraph, in a sense, is really going to confuse them, because what they will remember is the last bit.
Yes.
And all of the other steps will be forgotten, so then you wonder why they haven't done what you instructed them about early on. So keep it simple, keep it down to one step at a time, and you will find that you have a greater rate of success.
So even with things like eating, rather than say, get on with it keep going, actually say, put your fork in the potato, bring it up to the mouth.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
Yes, very specific. Pick up your fork, put it into the meat. Cut the meat, or you might cut the meat already for them, depending on what their level of skill is and independence, and then you would say, now put the fork in your mouth. And again, this is going to be tailored to what that particular person needs. Somebody may not need that assistance, and they may be quite okay and very fluent with their eating skills, and then somebody else may need exactly that sort of assistance. So what you do is just fill in the gaps that the person can't provide for themselves. If you do too much, you take over and their brain gets lazy, in a sense, and doesn't have to do that work. So what we're doing is keeping the brain challenged to keep functioning.
What about non-verbal communication, Bernie? So I suppose making sure your face, you know what your face is doing. Even your posture, that could be important.
Yes, that's right. Leaning forward, showing interest, being turned towards the person indicates connection, and eye contact is one of those best ways of making sure that the person's concentrating on you and listening. So get their eye contact. You're going to have a much greater chance of comprehension and reception of what you're saying if the person is actually looking at you and you're looking at them and they can see your face. Your posture is towards them, turned and interested.
Dale, I think you're concerned about whether the diagnosis itself is actually going to exacerbate the situation for your mother.
That's right, Richard. I guess the stigma, really, of, you know, my mother hasn't been diagnosed, and she's a very sort of can-do sort of operator. You know, she's a mother of 10 children, and I guess she's spent her entire life being a very highly organised individual, and She, like a lot of, you know, I think people in their mid-70s, are very troubled by health problems. And I'm just wondering whether the stigma of sort of dementia, while she's aware of it, is going to just cause her a lot more anxiety than it would be just to go along as if nothing's happening.
Bernie?
Okay, I think here it's important to tailor your approach to her. If her personality is that of being a very much a person in control of herself and her life and can do, as you say, sort of approach to life, then you need to judge whether or not to tell her early on about what's happening, she needs to be part of the process by the sound of it. Her need to be in control of what's happening is something that is pretty high by the sound of it. So maybe providing information and giving her choices early on is going to be the best way that she can feel in control of things. And that's really the question. What does she need to feel good about herself in this situation? So I'd be tailoring the approach to that. And it may well be that she needs information. Otherwise, if you detect some defensiveness, I'd back off and just let it go to a point where she feels she has control. But I'd engage others, perhaps GPs and others in the process of diagnosis, to help support them. If she's a person who has traditional senses of authority and knowledge, then she may well see that the GP is the person who knows, so I'll take notice of him or her, if that's the case. So that may well be the process to go down.
I hope that's helpful, Dale. Bernie, just before I let you go, and very briefly, you argue it's critical to manage your own needs at the same time. And I guess it's easy, if you get very caught up in this, to not do that.
That's right. I think one of the, and certainly the evidence from studies, particularly those conducted in Sydney by people like Henry Bradati, who have had great dedication to studying and finding ways to support family caregivers over the years. We know that a lot of family caregivers experience a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety, and a lot of social withdrawal as a result of their life caring for somebody else. And I think there are four pillars to supporting yourself. One is make sure you eat well, so good food, good exercise, good social life, and good sleep. And often all of those are somewhat difficult to obtain and support yourself with in the process of caregiving, but they are really important to ensure that somebody continues really in their capacity as a caregiver.
Bernie, it's been terrific having you on today. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Richard.
That's Bernie McCarthy, clinical psychologist and dementia consultant and educator, and his book's called Hearing the Person with Dementia: Person-Centred Approaches to Communication for Families and Caregivers. You'll find publication details on the Life Matters website, abc.net.au/rn/Life Matters. Keep the conversation going on the website or call the listener line 02-833-1430. Stay with Life Matters now. Still to come, your feedback for the week, but next, a campaign to help bring missing children home.